Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast for Thursday, November 15th, 2018. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. I'm good.
I didn't even ask you. You got out ahead of me there. I'm glad to hear you're doing well. And you saved me the trouble. So, Andrew, I have Andrew Orr with me today. How are you doing, Andrew?
Hey, I'm doing well today.
Excellent. All right. Today, the first thing I want to talk about is, John, you wrote an article yesterday about education, specifically students, and a way that Apple can assist them with AI in particular, not just technology. So tell us a little bit about that.
This would be a grand challenge. There is a problem with transition to college, I've discovered through my experience. So students are in high school, they're with the teacher all day long in various classes, they have access to teachers. Then they graduate to college and they're suddenly told that they have to spend 3 hours outside class for every hour inside class, and they don't have class every day. So they maybe have class once or twice a week. And they're given assignments, and they go home with their glorious MacBook Air or their Chromebook or whatever they're using. And they've got a project, and suddenly there's silence. The rest of the time, people are talking at them. There's input, there's music, there's YouTube, there's videos. There's all sorts of inputs coming into their life, and then they're sitting there at their computer, and all of a sudden it gets real quiet. And students have a hard time making this transition, I've noticed.
Okay.
And so it seems to me that it would be very sensible and very much in need in our modern society if we could have an intelligent companion that could help us, guide us, coach us. You know, tutors are one thing in school. It's a hit-and-miss service. There's urgency in getting the project finished, the homework assignment done. Excuse me. But when you walk away from the tutor, you get your work done, but you don't have any more insight than you used to have. There's a definite need for a coaching process, an AI agent that can dig in and figure out what the deal is, whether it's programming or physics or mathematics or other more technical subjects. So I had this idea that it would be really great if Apple, which has declared its interest in education, would take up the grand challenge of having a next generation Super Siri, something that could be your student coach companion. To help you answer questions. Students have a hard time asking themselves questions in order to get started with their projects. Like, what tools do I have available to me? What did I learn in the last exercise that can apply to the one I'm doing now? In the case of programming, how can I use what I know about math to set up a code framework? All sorts of questions. They don't come easily in the dorm room when the student is by himself or herself.
Okay.
And so I wrote an essay that explained the problem and explained how I think modern technology could bring us something that would be grand, nudge the student into simple concepts, coach, make suggestions, look at what the students has done, provide feedback, provide analysis. Because often students, you know, they'll do a problem and they'll say, well, I'm done, I'll turn it in. And they don't have any sanity check. They don't do math or on their programming code to see if it's sensible. My wife had a student who was supposed to calculate how many square feet there was in a room, and it came out to be 450,000 square feet, and they submitted it.
I have the vaguest of notions about square footage, and I know that that's not necessarily what you would end up with.
But that's what the code said, and too often the students, you know, look at their answer and they say, well, I wrote the code, I got the answer, I'm going to submit it, cross my fingers. Mm-hmm. And there's so many ways that you can have a sanity check, and especially a coach or a mentor who could say, well, let's take another look at this.
Now, I want to disagree with you a little bit, only because I feel like having the machine assistant to do this, I feel like that on the one hand would be really useful, but on the other hand, I sort of look at it like the problem that we see right now with self-driving cars, like in that, like the technology maybe on paper is doing the right thing, or like according to the set of instructions, you know, works as designed, you know, as they say, and yet that's not necessarily the right thing to be doing in that instance, you know, and that, so that for me is part of what I see as the problem here. When I was in college, it would have been great if I could have had an assistant, but more like you think of a personal assistant or an executive secretary sort of person, because I generally had that by, you know, the fact that my mom was a teacher. And so she would sit down and we basically had like the status meeting every night about like, this is what I have to work on today and this is what's due tomorrow and in a week and whatever. And so like I had somebody to help keep me on track with that stuff. And without that safety net, it was hard, and it would have been a lot nicer if I'd been able to have an assistant. I mean, well, a lot of things would have been easier in college if I'd had an iPhone, but yeah, primarily being able to have that sort of assistant where like I can sit down with that with an AI assistant that says, you know, like you've prioritized that the thing you need to spend the most time on is this class. You know, maybe you're struggling in that one in particular. So, you know, you need to make sure that you spend that time.
Too bad I don't have the Kelly Bell right in front of me. I would ring it. This is called executive function. This is the one thing you do want to develop yourself. This is why.
Yeah, but an assist would be nice. I mean, I did develop it, but it was hard.
Chess is taught in some schools because it develops executive function. What's my status? What's my plan? Where am I going? What are the impacts of my decisions? What's the long-term planning? What's the strategy and tactics? What's my next step? What do I need to look for in the long term? What are the loose ends and details? Mm-hmm. All that's wrapped into something called executive function, and that's something you want to have the student develop on their own rather than have too much of a crutch.
Right, and I'm just talking about having the ability to be able to dial that to where you need it. Like, if you've never been a person who had to do any of that, you know, we hear a lot about like helicopter parents. So like if you have a helicopter parent and now you're in school somewhere else and that parent isn't with you anymore, you need a lot more help than somebody who didn't grow up in that environment, who's been managing on their own, was maybe somebody who, you know, that person that everybody went to high school with that like got really good grades and had a job and was on the football team or was a cheerleader or whatever and was able to juggle all of that stuff successfully. That person doesn't need the amount of guidance from that imaginary assistant that somebody else would.
It makes me feel a little queasy. I mean, it's one thing to have a friendly tutor to help you walk through a problem. It's another thing to have a nagging nanny and say, well, it's 3 o'clock. It's time to do your physics homework. Sit down, damn it, and get to work. You know, what's going to happen? You're going to turn that thing off right away. You're going to delete it.
Right. And that's like, and that's not necessarily the thing I'm looking for either. It's more, it would be something a little more machine learning-y where you can feed it some parameters. You know, I'm doing really well in English. I'm getting good grades. Everything there is making sense. So, I need to spend, you know, the required time on English, but not a lot more than that. And let's say I'm also taking French and I'm having a really hard time with French. So I need to make sure I'm devoting more time to that, and being able to have an assistant help with that is more the thing that I think I was trying to get out of the article that you wrote. Now, I like the idea that, like, as far as assistant goes, like, you know, you and I obviously have different values for assistant. Andrew, would something like this have been helpful to you?
Yes, probably.
Yes.
I'm just kind of surprised that no one has tried to create that product, or maybe they have, and I don't know. I don't know anything about programming, but I think that would be pretty helpful if the environment would be able to help you as you're coding and point out mistakes and offer suggestions.
Xcode does a lot of that in a tactical sense. And if you're trying to write a function, you can call up the function in a little window and it'll show you the arguments and the type of each argument so that you don't make a mistake in the argument types. And it does some analysis of your code. But it's all mechanical. It's all on the screen as opposed to an intelligence that's trying to watch over you and help you get through the hard parts.
Mm-hmm.
And Xcode assumes that you pretty much know what you're doing. In the first place, you know, you wrote a flowchart, you have a concept in mind, you have experience. You're writing code with a focus and a purpose. If you're not, you're not going to be very successful. It takes years of practice to do that. But that's for a professional developer who's mastered Swift or Objective-C or C++. But for those students who are battered with exercises and, you know, have a homework assignment and they go back to the dorm with their computer and they're wrestling and they're trying to ask themselves questions. What do I know? What tools do I have? How can I use what I already know? How can I approach this problem? How can I structure it? How can I use a similar example in another exercise I did to apply to this one? What are the typical mistakes I might make? All those questions are born of a hard experience. And a coach can sometimes help nudge a student into thinking along the right lines. So that's kind of like how I'm seeing it, as opposed to the tactics of an IDE.
Okay. Well, one of the reasons that that's sort of interesting to me is partly because I wonder if it would be hard for the machine learning to do it in a way that helps that student, because everybody is a little different with the nudge.
It's a grand challenge. It's not, as I said, it's not just Siri 2.0 or 3.0. It is a massive undertaking as an artificial intelligence agent to become a true, relatable, you know, identifiable companion who you can talk to and senses what you're driving at. I think one of the biggest frustrations we have of Siri today is that when Siri fails, the first thing we notice when Siri fails is we realize that Siri didn't really have the essential insight into what it is we were driving at, which is what caused a laughable answer.
Yes,
so
sometimes.
That's the hurdle.
Okay. Well, I look forward to thinking about this further, mostly because I can't wait to see what you think about how we're going to evolve from Siri to, like, Dr. Theopolis. So, and there's a deep cut for people. Go look up Dr. Theopolis and get back to me. In the meantime, we are going to move on to our sponsors. We have two sponsors this week. The first is LinkedIn Jobs. And as you know, the right hire can make a huge impact on your organization. That's why it's important to find the right person. You can post a job on a job board and hope, but how often are you hanging out on those same job boards? Don't leave finding someone great to chance. Post your job to a place where people go every day to make connections and discover opportunities. And that's LinkedIn. Most LinkedIn members haven't recently visited a job board, but 9 out of 10 are open to a new opportunity. And with 70% of the U.S. workforce on LinkedIn, posting on LinkedIn is the best way to get your job opportunity in front of the right people. Head over to linkedin.com/TDO and get $50 off your first job post. Again, that's linkedin.com/TDO and get $50 off. Terms and conditions apply. Our second sponsor today is OpsGenie. And again, as you know, incidents are inevitable and everything comes down to how fast you can respond. And that's why there's OpsGenie by Atlassian. OpsGenie helps DevOps teams plan for both service disruptions and unscheduled maintenance, as it were, as well as having outages that are also planned. Teams have the power to respond quickly and efficiently to those incidents, unplanned or not. And you can make sure that all the right people get those notifications thanks to alerts that come from integrations with tools like New Relic, Jira, and hundreds more. So if you go visit opsgenie.com, that's OpsGenie.com, you can sign up for a free company account and add up to 5 team members today. Now, the other thing I want to talk about is, and we have a few minutes left. Andrew, we've been discussing this Facebook kerfuffle commotion. situation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a word for it. I'm not sure which word we want yet, because we're still in the middle of it, and I don't know how it's all going to play out. What I know is that this was all sort of kicked off by a really interesting piece in the New York Times talking about how Facebook has been sort of working on its image problem, both behind the scenes and out in front. And you wrote that up this morning. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so the situation is kind of funny. Basically, Tim Cook had an interview a while ago where he made some comments like, yeah, Apple cares about privacy, we care about our users. And then the interviewer had asked him something about the Cambridge Analytical thing, because
yes,
the interview happened like, I don't know, a week or two after that.
In the midst of sort of Cambridge Analytica, which, for people who may not remember, the Cambridge Analytica thing that we're talking about is Cambridge Analytica was a company that was doing some very... Well, at this point, we still don't know exactly what it was they were doing with all of the data that Facebook handed over to them that was user data. Because as you hand over your data to Facebook, Facebook is handing your data over to other people. And those people are the people who are paying for it, which is why you get to use Facebook for free. And it was a bad scene, and there was a lot of conversation about it. And I don't remember what happened after that, but there was some other headline that started dominating the news cycle, and Cambridge Analytica sort of faded away. But the fallout of that was that it became very clear that when Facebook was handing data over, there was no consequence if you did something with it that you weren't supposed to be doing. And there was no clear outline of what it was you weren't supposed to be doing, because all Facebook really cared about was getting the data sold, not necessarily what people were doing with it. That seems like about the right... That seems like the long and the short of it. So there you go. And so after this happened, Tim Cook gave this interview where he talked about how Apple doesn't roll that way.
Yeah. Yeah, like the interviewer had asked him, well, what would you do if you were in Mark Zuckerberg's position? And Tim Cook shut that down by saying, we wouldn't be in that position in the first place. The end. And
yes,
that apparently made Mark very angry. And the New York Times revealed that after that, Facebook went on this campaign. They hired this public relations group called Definers.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Definers Public Affairs. And this is this group that helps companies apply these like political strategies for public relations. And so they ended up partnering with this conservative news website to spin the whole situation to try to put Facebook in a better light.
Mm-hmm.
And what's ridiculous is that they linked Facebook critics and said that they were funded by George Soros, which is, you know, George Soros conspiracies are pretty common.
Yeah, I was going to say that should sound familiar to a lot of people. Somebody I don't like was obviously financed by George Soros. The other thing in that story that I thought was interesting was the part where after this interview with Tim Cook came to light, like it was published and you know, it wasn't a big deal. You know, at the time, it was just Tim Cook sat down with a reporter and this is what they talked about. And here's the interview. Here's what questions were asked. And here's what Tim Cook said. And after Tim Cook said some things about how, you know, we value users' privacy. And it, I mean, no matter how you read it, there's a little shade being thrown at Facebook right there. And Zuckerberg's response was to launch an internal campaign against iPhones and make everybody use Android phones instead, because he didn't like what Tim Cook had to say.
Well, that might actually not be correct.
Oh, really?
I was doing during my research. I mean, I did mention that in my article.
Yeah.
But someone I was reading on Reddit, and someone had suggested that they could have already been using Android phones, because they've done that before where they had like 2G Tuesday where they purposely used cell phones to try to see what the actual user experience was about.
Yeah.
And they said that Facebook was using Android phones just to see what Facebook was like on Android.
Okay.
So that might not be
100%
because
accurate.
Of whatever Tim Cook said.
Right. Although it wouldn't, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't sound completely out of keeping with something that Mark Zuckerberg would do, given the other things that do know that he has done in the past. So I'm happy to be wrong, but it also does seem plausible. And, you know, not just him. Like, you know, we saw the same sort of campaign by Steve Ballmer at Microsoft when people were walking around with iPods instead of Zunes, you know, and iPhones instead of Windows phones. Like, there was a campaign, and, like, what everybody ended up doing instead was just going and buying other headphones so that it wasn't obvious you were using white headphones with your Apple device on the Microsoft campus. So
dumping your phone is a process. It's not just something you do, like changing your breakfast cereal. It's a process you gotta go through. It's a real pain.
Yeah, but would it really surprise either one of you to know that Mark Zuckerberg had made this declaration?
I don't know.
Nope.
Not even a little. Yeah.
Just because I don't have great love for his company doesn't mean I'm going to cast aspersions on his.
Oh no, I'm not casting aspersions at all.
Dictatorial tendencies.
So stories that I've seen already. Like I watched the frontline story about Facebook and what happened. You know, some things that have happened there over time, and some of that was also pretty illuminating. And you know, you start to find out a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more.
Saying you wouldn't be surprised if somebody you don't like did something wacko is not my cup of tea. So
okay. Well, and I mean, like I said, it's not unheard of. We've seen it happen before at other companies from other people. So it does seem like a thing that could happen. So this all started because there was an article in the New York Times that talks about Facebook, and there's a number of people on the byline. There was a lot of research into it. That's where all of this kicked off. And so it'll be, I think it'll be interesting to see where the waves of that ripple out to as it continues to make the rounds. I'm very curious. I will say one thing that I did like in reading the article was that they are, I don't think it was I don't remember if it was in the article or not, but it's something that I read very recently was the same thing that you mentioned about 2G Tuesday, where they do try other platforms and slower networks and different things to make sure stuff works the way that it should. Or at least the way they think it should.
2G Edge is gone. I don't think it exists anywhere anymore, does it? I thought the worst you could possibly get anywhere in the U.S. right now is basic 3G.
Well, they're talking about they're testing for the rest of the world where 3G is not the standard. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were doing like GPRS testing just to make sure that it works in other parts of the world, because they want to connect everybody. So they want to make sure it works for everybody. So I think most of that testing is probably for stuff outside the United States, which again is a good idea. Not a lot of places do. So I would advocate 2G Tuesday everywhere if I could. It's a really good idea to make sure that things work. You know, even if not everybody has access to the bandwidth you have or the cell network you have or, you know, whatever it might be. So with that, we're going to go ahead and call it a day for today. I do want to thank both of you for being with us. Andrew, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And John, thanks for being here and joining me today.
My pleasure.
Even though you didn't bring your bell.
I'll have it ready next time.
All right. And that's going to do it for Thursday, November 15th, 2018. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. And until then, be excellent to each other.